The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth in the world's greatest salmon fishery through investments in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.
This is KDLG's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. It's Monday, June 29th. I'm Molly Dishner.
Yeah, it's been fairly slow, as one of my crew members said. You know, I got the practicing down pretty good for now.
That was Coffee Point set netter Mike Davis. Fish and Game extended today's Nooshigak openers for both the set and drift fleets to try and increase fishing pressure. Catches are still increasing in Igigik, and the set and drift fleets will fish there tonight and again tomorrow. Ugashik and Naknak-Quijak both open tomorrow. Coming up, FRI offers some analysis of the run, an update on the squabble over who can access the MSC's certification, and Chinook are getting smaller.
We first started looking at this on the Copper River when we noticed through testimony at the Board of Fish by upriver users that fish were getting smaller, and we went and looked at the data, and sure enough, they were decreasing through time.
First, let's run through the data. Stay with me. At the Port Muller test fishery, yesterday's index was 53, the second highest of the season. The best day was June 26, when it was 100. And the genetics are back for the fish that showed up that day. 37% were headed to Igigik, 34% to the Quijak, 12.5% to the Wood, and 4% to Igushik. Yesterday's baywide catch was 531,000 sockeye, for a season total of 1.9 million fish. In Igigik, yesterday's catch was 203,000 sockeye, bringing the season total to 925,000. The Naknak-Quijak catch was 70,000, season total 83,000. The Ugashik catch was 76,000, season total 198,000. And the Nooshigak fleet hauled in about 182,000 fish for a total of 761,000. That's catch. Now a look at escapements. Yesterday's Igigik escapement was 65,910 sockeye, bringing the total to about 400,000. The escapement goal range is 800,000 to 2 million. About 44,000 were counted on the Naknak River yesterday for a total of 204,000. The goal there is 800,000 to 2 million. 8,000 were counted on the Quijak for a total 47,000 out of a 2 to 10 million goal. Yesterday's Ugashik count was 33,000 for a total 59,000. The goal there is 500,000 to 1.4 million sockeye. At the Nooshigak sonar, about 6,700 kings were counted yesterday, bringing the total to 64,000, which is within the escapement goal range of 55,000 to 120,000. 38,000 sockeye were counted there for a total 273,000, and the sockeye escapement goal is about 370,000 to 900,000. Yesterday's Wood River Tower count was about 67,000 sockeye for a total 325,000, with almost 11,000 added by 6 a.m. today. The sockeye goal range is 700,000 to 1.8 million. And the Ugashik count was 6,200, bringing the total to 36,000 sockeye, with about 3,500 added by 6 a.m. The goal there is 150,000 to 400,000. How many boats are out? Igigik, 463 permits on 378 boats. Naknak-Quijak, 567 permits on 490 boats. Nooshigak, 448 permits on 373 boats. Ugashik, 107 permits, 80 boats. Togiak, 42 permits, 42 boats. As I wipe the sweat from my brow, take down my email and keep in touch. fish@kdlg.org. This is BBFR, back in a moment.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Crawley, fueling Alaska for more than 60 years with a full range of residential, commercial, aviation, and marine fuel products, and supporting local fisheries offshore with Bristol Bay Floater Fueling Services. More information at CrawleyFuels.com.
Each night, we read you the newest Port Muller test fishery numbers. FRI's Curry Cunningham looks at that data as part of his work on the in-season projection, and he offered us another update today.
first, we've seen strong catch per unit effort out of Port Moeller beginning on June 17th with a season high catch on June 26th, which nearly doubled from the 24th. However, you know, as you're well aware, very few fish have been caught inshore compared to what was caught out of the Port Moeller transect. And this indicates either that run per index or the number of fish seen inshore as catch or escapement per fish caught out at the Port Moeller transect is low for the current season, or we're looking at travel times that are at the longer end of the observed range.
What are you doing to get a better understanding of how long it does take fish to show up?
So what we can do is look at, since 2005, Alaska Department of Fish and Game has collected genetic composition of catch information. We can use that to partition catches out of Port Moeller and relate those to what we see in terms of daily catch and escapement several days later, and from that estimate the run per index and the travel time. And when we do that, we come up with district-specific estimates of travel time. And for places like the Nooshigak District, that averages between 3 and 11 days. For the Naknek-Quijack District, that's somewhere between 2 and 9 days. For Igigik, it's between 4 and 11 days. And for Ugashik, it's between 5 and 16 days.
When do you think they might start showing up in larger numbers?
Well, given what we saw in terms of the increase in catches out of Port Moeller beginning on the 17th and again seeing this high day 2 days ago, I would expect if we were on normal travel time to have already seen those fish arrive inshore. If the fish are just starting to arrive now, then we're at the longer end of that transit time range.
So do you think the run is late, or can you say that yet?
Well, so there's a couple ways to interpret that. One, we see that at the district level, some of the districts in terms of cumulative catch and escapement are a little bit behind where we would expect to see them at this point in the season, given the preseason forecast and given average arrival timing and compression of the run. With that being said, we've also seen years where many of the inshore fish arrivals are a bit later than average. So a lot of that depends on run timing. Getting good estimates of the true run timing for a season depend a lot on having seen the peak in catch and escapement or drawing some conclusions based on the peak in catches out of Port Moeller. So until we see that, we don't really have a definitive idea about how early or late the run is.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
How's fishing out there? Seems slow nearly everywhere. Coffee Point set netter Mike Davis says the last couple years of earlier runs may have lulled people into expecting that to happen again this year.
There's a lot of effort, and a lot of people kind of, they're a little bit anxious, but you have to keep telling yourself it's still early. So we're looking at a more normal run, I guess, or normal year.
At the mouth of the Naknek River, Braden Williams from the fishing vessel Crimson Hunter says still no fish there either.
I think this north wind is pushing all the fish out into a ball, and they're balling up out in the bay. And then as soon as this wind dies down, they're going to come in really strong right around, you know, the 4th of July when the peak usually hits.
This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. Stay with me.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible in part by Naknek Family Fisheries, 246-FISH, or on the web at naknekfish.com.
Now let's go beyond the in-season info. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game recently published a study on the size of kings throughout Alaska, including on the Nooshigak River. Last week, I asked Regional Management Coordinator Bert Lewis about that study, which looked at data back to 1983. Hi, Bert. Thanks for talking to me today.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
So what rivers were included in your study, and how were they chosen?
We selected 10 rivers across the state of Alaska that pretty much represented the geographic range of Chinook salmon within Alaska. And they also covered a range of data from commercial fisheries, weirs, and escapement surveys. And that variation in the source of the data was also important.
And what did you find out was happening over those six generations?
We first started looking at this on the Copper River when we noticed through testimony at the Board of Fish by upriver users that fish were getting smaller, and we went and looked at the data, and sure enough, they were decreasing through time. The data was from the commercial fishery, and that has some biases in it, so it was hard to determine that it was actually occurring, although we were fairly confident it was, but there was still doubt. And to verify what we were seeing, we started looking at other systems, and it ended up broadening out to these 10 systems. And we found that the trend was the same across all 10 systems, that when you lump all the data together for the length of the fish, they were getting smaller through time. And it was consistent across all the systems. Then we started to take a more detailed look at the data and found that the primary reason for this decline in size was a shift in the dominant age class of the fish returning to spawn. And it was 6-year-old fish was dominant in most of these populations in the first part of the data series starting in the 1980s. And they are declining through time proportionally in the population such that now the dominant age class is 5-year-old fish. And so just the year difference of how long they spend in the ocean is what was really driving the reduction in size when they come back a year younger. And then on top of that, we found that secondarily to the shift in the dominant age class, we also found that each age class, especially for the 6-year-old fish, all 10 of them are declining in size for their own age class. It was less prevalent in the 5-year-old fish, which only 50% of them were significantly declining, although the trend was still there, although it wasn't as significant.
Looking here just at the bay, were all those results true for Nooshigak kings?
They fit in the pattern as well, and this has been documented. There's a couple other papers that have been done on the Nooshigak, one on the Chinook salmon and another on sockeye by Neela Kendall and others. And they found a similar pattern, which we corroborated. There's many different ways to look at this. Again, the dominant age class on the Nooshigak is getting younger, and the fish are getting smaller. So it held with the other 10 systems that we saw.
What does it mean if kings are returning to Alaska rivers smaller and or younger?
I think the implications of having smaller fish returning, and you combine that with the decline in abundances that we've seen pretty much statewide, the size of a fish is important, especially when you think about large females that come back because they have many more eggs, and their eggs are bigger, so they get better survival rate. And they also use habitat where they spawn and lay their eggs in larger gravel substrate that is not available to smaller fish. A reduction in size at maturity is important because it may influence, ultimately, individual reproductive potential and population fitness. And when you put that in the context of our declining abundance that we've been seeing recently, it's definitely an area that we want to keep our eye on, and there's some concern. And most of these systems that we looked at, which included the Yukon and the Kuskokwim, the systems in South Central Alaska, the Kenai, Deshka, and Copper, all the way down to the Yunik on the Canadian border in Southeast Alaska, are all part of the Chinook Salmon Research Initiative that we're using as kind of indicator stock. And just because we see these patterns in these 10 systems doesn't necessarily mean that we can extrapolate it to all Chinook salmon in Alaska, but it certainly suggests that these are things that we should be looking at in the future.
Do you know what causes that change?
It's uncertain what the cause is that's driving the trends that we see in age and size of fish. Many of these stocks have been subject to size-selective fisheries, commercial and sport, for over 100 years, and there's little doubt that that must have some influence. It's probably not entirely responsible for it, and because all of these populations are declining in a similar manner, it suggests that something is acting on them all in the same way, and that, what are they all exposed to at the same time? The marine environment. And we know that the marine environment has been changing, especially in recent decade. And we believe that that's probably a driver in this. And so it's going to be a combination of the history of size-selective fisheries, marine environment, which would then could include forage-based nutrient productivity, with upwelling of nutrient-rich waters as those patterns change, competition with other species, and with other salmon. There's more salmon in the ocean now than there ever has been because of a high productive cycle as well as ever-increasing hatchery production. And these probably all combine together to drive these patterns that we're seeing. There has been this decline in abundance recently. However, this year we're seeing stronger numbers of Chinook salmon really in many stocks across South Central. Nooshogak is looking promising this year. Copper River came back with stronger numbers. Cook Inlet in the Kenai Peninsula area, those are such contentious fisheries, and we're seeing stronger numbers there as well. And we've always said that salmon populations are cyclic, and it's a matter of time. And we're in a down period right now, and at some point they will be rebounding. And what the ultimate drivers are of abundance and these patterns that produce bigger or smaller fish, and everyone loves to catch big fish, we'll probably come back at some time, but it's really a lot of uncertainty that we don't understand about the ecological processes.
Again, that was Bert Lewis speaking with me about the declining size of Chinook salmon. Back in a moment. In other fisheries news, the two groups of processors at odds over who can put the Marine Stewardship Council's blue sustainability label on their fish appear to be at an impasse, says Chris Laddick, the state's Commissioner of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development.
It's going to be July here, which is going to be the height of the red salmon run in Dillingham, so I don't think there's going to be any resolution to it at this point, not what I've seen.
This spring, a group of 10 processors, including Trident, Leader Creek, North Pacific, Peter Pan, Icicle, Ocean Beauty, and others, asked to access the certification, which is held by the nonprofit Alaska Salmon Processors Association. Silver Bay heads up that organization. Copper River is also a member. The MSC label is needed to sell salmon in certain European markets. The two groups have been going back and forth about the terms under which the new group can join. The MSC sponsored mediation, but that failed. So the organization suggested binding arbitration. They couldn't agree on that either, Laddick says.
ASPA initially said they would do it, and then when only a portion of the Trident group agreed to do it, then ASPA pulled out.
Laddick says the governor wants to ensure that there's a market for Alaska salmon. But it's unclear what the next step is or who will make it now that the MSC's suggestion has failed. Laddick says over the next year or two, he'll work with the MSC on changes to the system to prevent a similar issue in the future.
I'm going to be working with MSC to make sure this doesn't ever happen again, that people don't get shut out of the MSC certification program.
Sorting that out could take a year or two. Finally tonight, we enjoyed reading about the renaming of a relatively new species of hairy-chested crab. Scientists discovered these yeti crabs in 2010, clinging to the sides of hot fence in the chilly Antarctic Ocean Peninsula. On account of its strangely hairy chest, the species was originally given the name Hoff crab after everyone's favorite TV star, David Hasselhoff, proving scientists do have a sense of humor. Or they all grew up watching a lot of Baywatch. But it's now been renamed after the much less well-known marine researcher Paul Tyler, and given the official name, Kawa Tyleri. Newsweek reports that the crabs are an interesting little breed, preferring water around 100 degrees Fahrenheit, living in extremely tight groups, and eating bacteria that grow in their ample chest hair. That's it for tonight's Bristol Bay Fisheries Report on KDLG. Catch us nightly at 6:30 p.m. with an early weekend show at 1:30 p.m. It replays at 10 and 2. Send us your feedback and song requests to fish@kdlg.org. I'm Molly Dishner, with help from the rest of our team. Keep in touch.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report was made possible in part by AIFMA, the Alaska Independent Fishermen's Marketing Association, representing fishermen since 1966. More information at AIFMA.org.